And welcome to the ISA Audio Library. This is program number 410 in the series. The title is Parenting. Ole asked me to be sure to tell everyone listening that working on ourselves can be rewarding and fun. So please have a good time of it while you listen. To receive this information as easily as possible, it is suggested that you listen in a quiet, undisturbed place, such as your home or your car. You can, of course, play the programs often and whenever needed.
Fundamentally, or basically, we have one job to do with children. And that job is to assist them to survive until they're able to survive on their own. That's our job. That's our only job. It is to assist so that they can survive until they are capable of taking care of their own survival. So if what you are doing in your life is to take care of the basic needs of your children so that they can survive until they're able to take care of their survival on their own, you're doing your job. Now, what goes on in your life in addition to that, and what goes on in their life in addition to that, is not about your basic job. That's you as a person living your life and them as individuals living their lives. Me as a parent, I may want to do something in addition to taking care of their basic survival needs. I may, which is for me. It's not really for them. I remember when my children were young. At first I thought I could teach them. And I began to realize that my children were picking up all my bad habits. I remember seeing my daughter behaving like in her relationship with me, the same way as I was behaving in my relationship with my father. And I saw that I had passed on to her the same mistakes that I had sworn that I would never pass on to anyone. I saw her manifest the result of the mistakes that I was making that I had picked up from my father. So I realized, no matter what my intention was, there wasn't much of an opportunity for me, really, to make an impact on my children other than through what I had learned myself. That is, if I began to work on myself and I began to handle my life, I would, out of that space, create an opportunity for the children as an example. What I then did with my children was to talk to them honestly. I told them right off when my daughter was 5 years old, I can't teach you anything. I'm still in the process of learning how to be a father. What I'm going to do is work very hard on myself so that I can learn to become a good father. In the meantime, what you have got is a barely adequate, mostly inadequate model. And that's too bad, but that's what you got. Now, I will take care of your survival. And if I find something that's worthwhile, I'll tell you. And I often told them about my worries, my fears, my inadequacies. I also told them about the successes and the insights and the things that I had discovered that would work. But I was really always operating with them as an equal. I wanted them to be a part of what the process of life was, which was an unfoldment for me. So I think that it is perfectly all right. You are not burdening your children when you communicate about what it is that's going on with you, because what it is that's going on with you, that's what it is, that's what's going on with you. It's not like you can hide it. So if you're troubled, you cannot pretend that you're not troubled. Your kids will pick up that you're troubled. Now, if you then don't acknowledge that you're troubled, what you are showing your children is somehow that it is not all right to be who you are. You're showing your children that it is not all right to have certain emotions. I don't believe that that is true. I think that life is like a symphony where there are bass tones and treble tones. And all of it makes up this fabric that's called life. And to not share that with children is very irresponsible. I always communicate what goes on with me. My sadness, my grief, my upset, my fear, my loneliness. I communicate about the worries that I have. Not laying it on them. Never making them responsible for what it is that goes on with me. There were some times when I didn't know what to do. Also in my relationship with them, and I would ask them, what do I do now? I mean, you're doing this, I don't know what to do. And because I have dared, maybe that's what it is that I did, I dared to treat them as individuals, as independent, and as somebody who could make a valuable contribution to me. Because I dared to do that, they grew up able to give me feedback, able to understand that I was in the same boat as they were, with fears and worries, not knowing what to do, and coming up against situations where there wasn't an apparent answer, and they would often assist me. They would often see that what they were doing was not fair. They could then also tell me when I was doing something that wasn't fair. So we learn from each other. And I think that if you come out of that space of openness, your children will become a tremendous asset in your learning how to be.
Well, in following up with something that you said about our purpose being to assist them in surviving, I really have difficulty separating where I sort of end and where they begin in that sense of how they feel about themselves.
I understand. Thank you. It's a real dilemma. Often we look at our children as some expression of who we want to be. I mean, never mind of who we are, but who we want to be. And we put this burden on the children that they ought to express how wonderful we are by having it together. So the poor children try very hard. They love us. That's a given, really, that they do. They may not always experience that. And they do love us. And then they look to us and see what is it that we need to do or be in order for our parents to feel all right. And what the parents say is, what you need to do and be is to be all right. And the poor child doesn't know what that means, because the child is not really unwilling to experience life. But when they begin to see that it is not all right to experience confusion, to experience shyness, to be awkward, to not have it together, to not know what direction to take. When the child sees that, they shut down a whole lot of their expression in life. To me, it is all right that my children don't know what they want to do, that they don't appear to have it together. I mean, I certainly already know that I don't have it together. Why would I expect them to have it together? I haven't met very many people, and I hesitate to name even one, who has it together. The only thing that I can really do with my children is to work very hard on getting it together for myself. See, as a child, we wake up one morning out in this world. And from that moment on, we have the possibility, the potential, to be anything. Literally anything. Anything that we know of, plus all the other things that are going to evolve between the moment that we are born till we grow up and can begin to manifest it. We can be a concert pianist, we can be a plumber, we can be a carpenter, we can be a secretary, we can be a housewife or houseman. We can be practically anything. Anything. Then we have the opportunity to choose. Now, how do we choose? Well, we look to our parents to see what does that look like. So what I have to do in my life is to work very hard on choosing. Choose something. Now, if I choose to be a plumber, I can't then worry about all the other things that I can't have, because one of the things with choice is you choose one and that's it. And then focus on becoming a very good plumber. Then our children see, aha, this is the process. You choose something and then you go for it. If we have played our cards correctly in our own lives, they can do anything and derive value. Because we don't derive value by the external circumstances. We derive value from being committed to doing something well and then doing it well. So it's not so much that you have the responsibility for making your children happy. If you were to take that on, you would fail. You would absolutely fail. There's no way that you and I, even though that we want to, there's no way that you and I can take responsibility for somebody else's happiness, including our children. We can offer them opportunities. Now, I never said to my daughter, go to college. I said to her, these are the opportunities that I see available. If you do this, then those opportunities open up. If you do that, those opportunities open up. If you do so and so, I don't know what's going to happen because I don't have any experience in that area. So I never said to her, do this. That'll make you happy. I have said to them, what I've discovered is that when I choose to do something and do it well, I'll experience satisfaction. Now you go and do it, and you do it whichever way you want to do it. And there are always consequences. One of the consequences by choosing to do something well and then doing it well is, as far as my observation, that I experience satisfaction, joy, harmony, power. All those things in life that makes for the experience of love, happiness, and satisfaction. If I don't do it, if I say I'm going to do this and then I do it half-heartedly, the experience that I have is dissatisfaction, disharmony, unhappiness, criticalness, lack of aliveness, lack of harmony. So I think that where you're coming from about wanting to do something for your children is misdirected when you direct it to the children. It appears to me that the only place I can make a difference is in me. And then they can look and see whether or not they would like to copy that experience that I manifest or some other experience. And because I don't have any attachment to what my children do, I can love them, support them, and enjoy them in whatever they do.
Oli, I don't have any children. And whenever I think about having children, like I have this idea that I want to do it well. And when I think about how to do it well, it's like I don't have any idea about how to do it well. So it's like then I get scared about putting that on my children, my ignorance of not knowing how to do it. It's like, so, and then I see that it's like I'm catching myself on this trap because I'm never going to be ready.
That's right.
Ready to do it. So it comes out of me jumping and doing it. And at some level, I think that I can be conscious enough to see some things so that I don't repeat the same mistake. Like you said that you saw with your daughter, she was doing the same thing. It's like what I want to do is get conscious enough so that I can see that and remember that so that I don't do that.
Yes.
Because like I see as we were answering these questions that it's like at the level of consciousness, of grasping the big picture, it's like I can see it right now while we're talking and it makes a lot of sense. And then when I've interacted with children, there's a time when it's like I start getting a little upset. It's like my stuff, because they don't do what I tell them to do that I think that they should be doing. And then I can see that with parents that happens a lot. That then it becomes like a war. It's like this conflict between, and I don't know that that's good. You know, it's like, that's the thing is that I don't know what is good, what is bad, what is useful. It's like, I can see that when I was growing up, I was a mess. And I'm still a mess. And and I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't know what what is the procedure? It's like, you know, we didn't get a manual. My parents definitely didn't get a manual, and I was pretty crazy too. So I don't know. It's like, I don't know if there's an answer to that question. It's like being ready, and at the same time, the responsibility of making it better for them, you know, so that we can improve the planet. It's like, I don't know that I can ever be ready for that.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's such a big question. It addresses all kinds of areas of life. One of the things I would like to suggest is that we appear to be two things. There is something that is you and me. There's an essence that is undefinable, undescribable, that we don't really understand, although that we have the experience of it in the form of our life. And inherent in that, there's this sense of integrity, doing what works, being in alignment with that life force that is undescribable, that whenever we want to look for it or look at it or communicate with it, it disappears. It's very elusive. Then there's another thing, another part of us, that's our mind. Now, our mind, when we come from our mind always want instant gratification and always want whatever it is that it considers that will allow it to survive. So there are those two things that go on all the time. There's the essence of who we are and the mind that seeks instant gratification. I'm sure that we all understand what the difference between the two are. Like you say to yourself, I'm going to go jogging to make my body last longer by keeping it exercised, my heart, my internal organs, and so on. Because you consider that life is important. And you want to perpetuate the opportunity to improve yourself. Improving yourself, keeping your body in such a shape that it can last longer, so that you can understand more about life, we can say comes from our essence. Then the mind says on January the 2nd, when it's raining, oh no, today is not a good day for running because it's raining. And anyhow, I'm late and I might catch a cold. And it didn't work on the 1st of January. I mean, after all, I came back and I could hardly breathe. So I better only run 3 times a week. And then you go back to bed. That's your mind that seeks instant gratification. It doesn't want to get out in the rain, doesn't want to take the body out. So now you know what the difference between the two are. All right, so to get back to your question about, I want to do it better. There is no manual, that's true. And there are certain things that I can say about being with children that I have seen works. Tell the truth. Be who you really are. Never mind this veneer of parenting, being some authority. Never mind that. Be a real person. I'm a real person with my children. I tell them what is really going on with me. I share with them, ask them for advice. Surely they don't have as much expertise in putting things together, and yet they have a cunning. They have an ability to cut through because they don't have as many barriers that separates them from the essence of the problem. So they can cut through and see things at times that I don't see. So by treating them as equals, that is, as human beings in the process of evolvement, unfoldment, to have another spirit share your life is a tremendous asset. Tremendous asset. Most parents, of course, don't look upon their children as an asset. They look upon them as a liability. as a nuisance, as something that ought to be put to bed at 8 o'clock, or at 6 if you can get away with it, whom they hope will not wake up until 7 or 8 or 9 o'clock the next morning. And of course the children know that. Instead of setting up ground rules that are agreed to by the children, if you are willing to conduct your life with integrity, you are already a good model for another spirit to share life with. The question always comes back to my conducting my life with me, not my conducting my life in relationship to them. Parents have this misnomer that they are supposed to be experts. They're not. We are not. We are beings in unfoldment. And our children are born into another time frame. So don't come into it as an expert. And don't treat your children from this point of authority. It's very wise, and many parents don't get to that place of realizing that they don't know. And they definitely don't share that piece of information with their children. If parents would only begin by telling their children, now listen here, I don't know, so watch out. Don't take my advice literally. There are certain things that I can inform you about. And there are certain things that I realize that you are not yet in a place to handle. But for the most part, don't take me as the authority. Let's establish some ground rules so that we can work in harmony in this environment. It is, after all, my house. But don't take me as the authority. Should I fall into that trap of coming on as the gospel, please question. Whenever you feel that that's appropriate to do, please question, so that we can discover together. Now, it is this sense of togetherness that really constitutes the manual for parenting. Because it is not just the adult that's learning. It's certainly the child that's learning. It's the both of them that are learning. The parent have thought often that they are the authority and learning has stopped because, after all, they have completed school and that's the end of learning. It's the beginning of learning at best. But usually it's the end of learning. So if the parents begin to assume the responsibility for being in the situation, in the learning experience, together with their children and acknowledge that, I think that all of us could be great parents. Great parents. I want to address this about doing it wrong. I think that that is a misconception. This, you are adding a value judgment to what you're doing. Internally, in our essence, you know whether or not you are violating your own integrity. That's not wrong. And there are consequences. Externally, in our mind, we do things wrong based on what we think other people's opinions of what we are doing are. I don't think that we should confuse the two things. First, we need to recognize that the value judgment is something that we have added. There is what you do, and there are consequences. There is what you do not do, and there are consequences. And I think that people will always do the best they know how. They'll always do that. And if I'm in my mind, I'm very mechanical, and the consequences of being in my mind is that I seek instant gratification. When I seek instant gratification, I will lie, I will cheat, I will steal, I will do anything to get instant gratification. That's a function of the mind. It seeks instant gratification. When I come from my essence, I have certain guidelines formed by agreements that I made, goals that I've set, intentions I have about my life. When I don't violate my agreements, I may be misinformed. I think that that is perfectly acceptable, to be misinformed. When my purpose is unfoldment, I will know from time to time that I was misinformed about certain aspects of life, and I will make correction. In my discussions with my children, it is all right to acknowledge that I don't know, and maybe with their assistance, we can together discover. I don't feel I have apologized for certain mistakes that I have made in my relationship with my children in the very beginning when they were very young, before I knew anything about children. I would react to my children, put blame on them for reasons that they had nothing to do with. Like I would get upset, frustrated, not knowing what to do, and I would punish them for having caused that. When later on I recognized that that was a mistake, I apologized for the wrongdoing that I had done, and that was it. That was complete for me now. Now I can begin to do, with the knowledge that I now have, the things that are in alignment with what my intention is. So I freely discuss my intention with my children, and they have input. They can say, well, that doesn't work for me, or I want you to do this or that, or, and I will look at it, and I will ultimately choose what is harmonious with me. That is, what does not violate my integrity. When I do that, I have no guilt. Oh, yes, there's always this standard that I would want to do better, whatever that means. The standard that I use, however, is, am I in alignment with my integrity, with my intention for my life? And if you are in alignment with that and you share that freely and openly with your children, then in most cases, the children will totally support that. Let me see if I can address all over again the question of parenting. My parents realized later, when I was a teenager, that they had, in fact, made many mistakes, or at least that's what they thought, that's what they concluded. They have acknowledged to me when I was a grown man that they had made many mistakes. However, during the time that I was growing up, I suspect that they thought that they were doing a pretty good job. And I think that most parents think that. That they're doing a pretty good job in their own lives and in the life that they have in relationship to their children. This would explain why so many parents are surprised, horrified, upset, outraged, frustrated, hurt, angry when their children are in their late teens and begin to manifest things that they were not brought up to think, or to fear, or to want, or to manifest. And I think that it would be wise for parents to have a look at how they feel inside about themselves. Now, that is a very difficult task if you think that you're all right the way that you are, which you are, by the way, if you think that you're all right the way that you are, there would be little motivation for you to look inside and to question. But I think that our role as people, as human beings, is to question. To question primarily our relationship with ourselves. So people who are listening should look at their own lives and really scrutinize beyond the belief that you have it together. Look at some of the areas in yourself that is not together. I know now that it would have been a tremendous asset to me If my mother and father had sat down with me in a family meeting and talked about the way that it really was for them, I think that it took me an unnecessary 20 years of my time to understand grown-ups, because I never had a real experience of what it was like for my father to be my father and for my mother to be my mother. I never had a real experience. I couldn't understand. Sometimes my mother would cry. I didn't understand because I was never let into her having an experience of her life in her and experiencing certain conflicts there that resulted in the experience of grief. I didn't. I didn't understand anything about frustration as an adult. I thought that my father was like a god. He had it always together. I remember the first time I discovered that my father was a little slippery when it came to tell the truth. And it was devastating for me to realize that my father was not perfect, which then later on resulted in a lot of conflicts in me in my relationship to my father when I was 16 and 17, which then subsequently got worked out. But it could have not been worked out, and I could have still been in conflict with my father because he didn't live up to that idea that he had projected. The first place is to tell the truth in here, internally in me, to tell the truth and then be willing to share from that place in me where I am essential and honest, authentic. Not out of the pretense of filling in the image of a role, the conceptual picture I have of the way I ought to be. This is the way that we normally operate our lives, in the roles that we assume that we are supposed to play. I want people to get away from the role that they are supposed to play and be real. And to be real is to tell the truth, like my father much later in his life told me about the difficulties he experienced in his relationship with God. That was a perfect way of getting to the essence of his nature, the kind of struggles that he went through. And it added a dimension in my understanding of the essence of who he was that I'd never had as a child. And I feel that this is where we need to begin, to become essential and authentic with our children rather than authoritarian and, you know, the disciplinary. So when you say it about being a super mother, a super mom, I knew that you weren't doing things for you, which is being real. You were doing things to fill an image that would make you okay in the eyes of others. And you would go around perhaps feeling really inadequate or not satisfied, especially if you thought that you were doing everything well and it wasn't working out. And it comes from not looking at what the truth of it is, which is to do it for you. I don't do things for my children. I do things for me, not in that limited, narrow, selfish sense of self-gratification. I'm not talking out of that. I'm talking out of a more essential part of our nature, that essence that I mentioned from time to time, not from this instant gratification mind stuff, which is selfish at the expense of others. Now, I'm talking about the ideal that I strive towards. What kind of a father do I want to be? But in order to be that kind of a father, there are consequences. And I know that I am doing them, whatever the consequences are. I am doing what I need to do in order to have the experience that I want to have, which may be to be a good father or a thoughtful person or a kind person or someone who makes a contribution someone who is authentic. Whatever my ideals are, and every person has to establish his or her own ideals. And if all of you would establish your own ideals, you would discover that they are all the same. We want to be authentic and real and honest, compassionate, caring, loving, no matter who it is, and I've spoken to thousands. That's what's at the bottom of it all. We all want to come out of the experience of being in love, being kind and compassionate, care, and so forth. The consequences of that is that I need to do whatever it is that the consequences are. So I'm then doing it for me, which makes it gets my children off the hook. Now, if you have come from, I did it for them, which is a setup for great disappointment, because they resent being in debt to you. They also resent, if you are saying that you're going to be a super mom, you better be a super mom, which you can't be, because there are always going to be things that you're not willing or able to do, which then I would say, well, if you were a super mom, then you'll do it. Which is a great leverage to have with somebody who falls into the trap of wanting to pretend to be something that they're not. I think that the shift has to occur in me in being willing to risk being real. Now, when I'm real, and I then turn out to be real selfish and real narrow-minded and real possessive and real mean, whatever it is, well, those are the consequences. And then I have gotten to the essence of where I have evolved to. And I can now begin to make correction. I cannot begin to make correction if I'm not telling the truth about where I am in the first place. And the parents who are out there thinking that they are doing things for their children are mistaken. We are really doing it for ourselves and not in that narrow sense of self that is selfish and, you know, grabby, taking away from, but in that universal sense of self that includes everybody. And out of that nature, you will be doing things for you that just so happens to benefit everybody else, including your children.
Only when you were being real with your children,
yeah,
and you told them that you didn't really know how to be a father,
yeah,
did you find out that they judge you? I mean, did they say to you, well, that's it on you, and they want to trade you in for the neighbor's father because he said that he was a super dad?
Very good question. I even invited them to do that. If you're not happy with me, I'll help you pack your suitcase. You go find another one. Which was a risk, because I wasn't a particularly good father. I think what is important is to show our children that we can make life work. And stealing, for instance, gets in the way of making life work. The consequence of stealing is that you go to jail. Now, that's not making life work. And my children, I have not brought them up to consider things to be good or bad. I have brought them up with respect for their life, with the knowledge that they can experience their life being in harmony with themselves or with their God, whichever vantage point they have, that they can be in harmony and that that is the value in life. It's not whether it's good or bad. And I feel if you start off with children, pointing out their responsibility for their own well-being, that they will choose what works. What I'm not willing to do is to make excuses for them. What I'm not willing to do is to be responsible for the consequences of the choices they make. I am willing to give to them the insights that I have about consequences, and then leave the choice up to them. Life is dangerous and there are no guarantees. But I do feel that we do not give our children the respect, the recognition that they really need to have. in order to evolve as responsible human beings. So if you have not done it yet, begin now. Have a family meeting where each person has a voice. I've given my children the opportunity to see that even young persons in our society have the ability to make more money than I will ever make in my life. Like Shirley Temple, I used to use that as an example for my child. I said, now look at Shirley Temple. She makes thousands and thousands every week, much more than I ever did. And if you're not satisfied with me and the way that I do it, would you kindly get your fanny to Los Angeles and make it in films? And I'd be glad to do anything that you say in your house. Make sure it's one with a swimming pool, you know. And children can hear that. And they say, well, I'm shy. Great. I'm sure Shirley Temple was shy too. That's one of the things that you have to overcome, one of the obstacles. Well, I can't do it. Well, then stop bitching. It is not my fault that you can't do it. If you're saying to me that it's not possible, look at Shirley Temple. She did it many years ago. You really want to do it? You go look for it. Find whichever little niche in life where you can make whatever money it is that you need to make in order to have it be the way that you want it. But don't make me responsible for what it is you want. I'm not willing. And this is my house. Look, here's the deed. And I showed them the deed. Do you see any children on here? I don't see any children. I see Ole Glassen. That's what I see. I don't see any children's names here. Do you? If that's not fair, and I agreed with them. It's not. I used to think the same when I was a child. It wasn't fair. What is true, however, is that if we treat our children as persons who are responsible, who have integrity, who want their lives to work, we can negotiate them with them as free agents. They understand. They really do understand. And if they don't like it, let them go. They're going to go anyhow. Our purpose was to provide survival needs for them until they could learn to survive on their own. And if they want to survive on their own at age 17, great, go out and survive on your own. And what you want to do is to go and experiment with sex or with drugs or whatever, know what the consequences are. That my support for you as a person is unconditional. And my support is that you make your life work in a way that creates love and happiness and satisfaction and joy for you and those people that you connect with. So if you know a way to do that that is better than the way that I know, I am totally willing to learn from you. Now, having that point of view resolves a million potential conflicts. Literally, they disappear. There is this misnomer that children don't understand. Children do understand. You, as a parent, you sit down and discuss with children the problems at hand as equals. And they will let go of their position about it when they recognize they have not an answer. They will let go of it. At first, children are, of course, going to make you responsible. That's what you did to them. You made them responsible for you being happy. You said to them, well, when you don't do this, then I get unhappy. So then, oh, I see. So that's the way to do it. It is to make you responsible for my happiness. Well, great, so they'll do that forever. Until you let go and you recognize that you are not responsible for their happiness and they are not responsible for your happiness. Now, once you do that, then you are free. And then you can freely, out of who you are, support them. Freely. No attachment. You're not doing it for them. You're doing it for you. I think that it is really important because as parents, we have this mistaken idea that we are supposed to or able to make them happy. we even have the audacity to think that we can advise them what to do so that they will become happy. We don't. We have the hardest time of our lives to every now and then create a moment of happiness for ourselves. And here we think that we are experts on happiness. We are not. We can give them vitamins and wholesome food so that they can have strong bodies and go out and perhaps make it. But make it as far as happiness is concerned, I think that you and I both know that we have no idea of how to do that.
Only we can give them all the information about the choices and the consequences.
Uh-huh.
But what if your daughter had chosen to go to the party or otherwise put herself in what you consider to be a dangerous situation? Would you just sit back and let her risk herself?
I would have to do that. I would have to allow her to take responsibility. Now, remember, I must tell you that I had brought up my daughter for 10 years prior to this situation with the knowledge that she was responsible, with knowing what to do for herself. This is not true about all parents. So in the light of that, I will address what you said. My daughter have done things that didn't work, and there have been consequences from her actions that hurt her, upset her, caused her physical harm. And I love my daughter unconditionally and experience grief and sadness in relationship to the suffering that she goes through. As a parent, I would like to be able to limit the amount of suffering. As a matter of fact, I'd like to eliminate the suffering from her life. Why? Because I'm a creature of comfort. I used to think that it was because I didn't want her to hurt for her sake. What really is true is that I don't want her to hurt so that I will hurt. But that she has to hurt seems to be in the nature of what life is about. Seems to be. So when she chooses something that I suspect may result in grief, I learn to bear that and be compassionate and caring about her, but not responsible. I can still be there to support her to get through it and not responsible. If I say to her, now listen, if you go and deal cocaine, you most likely will end up in jail. That doesn't mean that I wipe my hands off her if she's in jail. No, I would no doubt go and visit her. And I would feel compassion that that is what she needed to do. I will not, however, discredit her ability to live her life. I would not. I would go visit her and talk to her and support her and encourage her and feel with her through her trials. And I think that makes us bigger people. Now, most parents, for their own limited selfish reasons, want their children to experience no grief, no pain whatsoever. So they feed them on marshmallows and candy bars, thinking that that's going to make their life work. But that doesn't take the pain away at the dentist. So we have to, as parents, assume that part of parenting that's called the experience of grief as our children go through the part of suffering that they have to go through. And you and I don't know. We just have to give them the opportunity to do it responsibly and with as much information as we have available to us because we have been responsible. If I do give my child the opportunity to be responsible and do tell my child about the consequences, at least the ones that I'm aware of, I also have to give my child the opportunity to choose. If I take that choice away from them and want to run their lives, I will be able to run their lives for a short period of time, as long as I'm stronger and bigger. But there comes a time when the child then rebels. And then we have these experimentations in all the things that the child was prevented from doing, which they naturally, most likely, would have rejected on their own had they been given a choice. But because I chose it for them, they are now going to show me that they can do it anyhow. That is where I think that a lot of the conflicts and problems and difficulties and suffering with the children come about. We cannot ultimately take the suffering away from children. There is a certain amount of pain in living. We just have to learn to be big enough to bear it and to be wise enough to give good advice. And the way that we get to be wise enough to give good advice is to tell the truth ourselves, to recognize our experimentation in life and to tell the truth about it, the things that we know and the things that we don't know. I think that it is really, it continues to go back to our willingness to dare trust our children, our willingness to dare respect our children. And when I talk about what works, many people may not understand what I mean. Let me see if I can briefly say what it is for me. I'm talking about two things. Remember, there is the differentiation between me, my inner self, and me, my mind, which in a sense is my outer self. That is, I'm concerned with what people think, and I'm concerned with immediate gratification, I'm concerned with others' opinions and like that. In my inner self, what works is the experience that I have of satisfaction. See, I'm never satisfied if it is at the expense of somebody. If you notice, although that in the immediate gratification category of the mind, I may sometimes momentarily experience satisfaction, but I know that if I extend the time frame a little bit, if I look at it in perspective a little, I'm not really satisfied if somebody else got hurt. So we have to look at the more essential part of who we are. From there, when I'm satisfied, it always includes that other people involved in this in a particular situation also won. If I won at the expense of it, I'm never satisfied. But there is no way that we can make our children do what we want them to do. What we can do is that we can create an opportunity for them to want to do what works. And only by our willingness to do what works in our own lives. We can only do it that way, and that's the only gift that we can ever give our children. I told my daughter when she was young, 5 or 6, 7 maybe, the only gift I can give you is to work on myself so that I little by little can become a better person that you can look to. I can't do it by telling you what to do because I don't know. I can only do it by working on my own life so that I can become an example. That you may then realize that is definitely not the way to do it, or there is some value to be gotten from certain things and then discard others.
Could you get more specific about the idea of ground rules and family meetings and just what do you exactly mean by that?
Yes, I'll be glad to do that. And I'll tell you out of my own experience, I have the good fortune of having had family meetings and established ground rules and had consequences. One of the things that we must get for ourselves, understand for ourselves, is that when we choose something, and we have the opportunity to choose anything, literally anything, that there are consequences. The first thing I did with my family when it came to ground rules and family meetings, I consulted with them. It wasn't working. And that is usually where it begins. It's not working. And to do more of it would not make it work any better. I've noticed that if it doesn't work to put a nail into a board and the board splits, to put more nails into the board somehow doesn't work. I sometimes have done that, and over again, it didn't work until I finally understood that I had to do it differently. So what I did one morning was at breakfast, I said that what I need is to have a meeting with all of us tonight. And I have something important that I need to get resolved for me, because there are things about the way that we live our family together that is not working for me. And I know that it can work. So I came with a proposal. I said that we need to make some ground rules about the way that we live together in this house. And we need to make some agreements together so that we can all experience love and happiness and satisfaction and a sense of security living together. If I can't be counted on to bring home money and you don't know whether or not you have to move out in a tent tomorrow, it's very difficult for you to plan a garden because you don't know whether you're going to be here 3 weeks from now. So you understand, and I understand, that there need to be certain ground rules. And also we understand that it is important that if we establish ground rules, that we keep the ground rules. For instance, there's a ground rule in traffic. Don't go across when there's a red light. Don't just come in your car and go straight across. We agree on that, and because not all people agree all the time on that, I always slow down when I come to a green light and just look around to see if people seem to be adhering to the ground rule. And so we know that when people don't adhere to the ground rule, that the consequence is that we operate in uncertainty. So I want to experiment with having ground rules that we can operate with, where we can operate in certainty. And I know that you can be counted on to do such and such, and you know that I can be counted on to do such and such. And I'm going to work with everything that I've got to be accountable. And what I'd like to extract from you is a promise to yourself, not to me, really, but to yourself, that you will work with everything that you've got to be accountable to, for the things that you say that you're going to be accountable for. So we set up certain ground rules, and the ground rules that we set up are not necessarily the ground rules that you would want to set up, because each family is an individual family. And their goals are perhaps different, at least superficially different. Ultimately, I think that we all have the same goal. We want to experience harmony and satisfaction, a sense of security, and an experience of giving love and receiving love within the framework of family. So I said, for instance, to my children, now, I expect that when you play with your toys, that you would pick them up when you are through and put them in whatever place you have designated for that particular toy to be in. And I expect you to do that on your own. Now, you can play in the living room, you can play in the dining room, you can play in the kitchen, and you can play in your own room. And you cannot play in my bedroom. That's one of the ground rules we had. I said, I'm also willing to play in the living room, in the dining room, and in the kitchen, and in my bedroom. And I relinquish the right to play in your room, unless you happen to invite me there. So I will not go into your room and play with your toys unless you have invited me in there. If I leave my things around and I've stopped playing with my things, you have the right to take my things and put them in the garbage, because what is left loosely hanging around is obviously things that should be put in the garbage. If they are not attached to a person at the time, they should be put in the garbage. And I will do the same with you. If you leave your toys around and you go outside and play, I will assume that you're through with those toys and that they really belong in the garbage, and I will then take them and put them in the garbage. So we made ground rules like that. We made ground rules that we would have dinner at 6 o'clock, and my wife would agree to prepare dinner with the assistance of us, and she would have dinner at 6. We agreed then to be there at 6, unless we notified her well in advance that we were unable to be there. And so we had a number of ground rules. We also talked about consequences, like if I didn't pick up my toys, they would be put in the garbage. If my wife didn't cook the dinner, she didn't get to eat. You know, whatever the consequences were. And we asked the children if they were willing to agree with that. And there were certain chores that had to be done. And, of course, the children thought that they shouldn't do the chores because they belonged to the grown-ups. It was their responsibility to do that. And we worked that one out. We realized that all of us had to do a little bit. Then comes the difficult part. That's when the children leave their toys in the living room. Or when you think that you have some special executive privilege that allows you to leave your things. Like if you have been working on the taxes and then you leave and the 5-year-old child come and scoop up all the papers for the taxes and put it in the garbage. See, we think there is a double standard, which is the standard and executive privilege of parents with no rights for the children. Now, that doesn't work. Because then we bring up children with the experience of no rights, that who they are don't matter. And then the only way that they can survive is to be authoritarian, which is a rather forbidding environment to live in. So one of the first things that happened, and that always happens with children, it seems, they are going to test out whether or not we mean what we say. And most parents back off right away. They don't mean what they say. They say, no, I'm not going to buy you candy. And then you go into the store and the child has learned how to intimidate you sufficiently in the light of everybody else being around. So you end up by buying candy just to get the child off your back, which means that the child now trusts you less. So that you have to establish trust. And what my child did was to put his favorite trucks on the living room floor and then leave and go outside and play. And there I came in. The day after, there were his trucks. Those were his favorite trucks. I knew it would break his heart if I threw them away. But I had no choice. I had already chosen. It's like you vote, and then you think that you can extract your ballot out and vote again. No. You put your vote in the ballot. That's it. Now you go for whatever it was that you said. So I had to take the trucks and put them in the garbage. And just tell my son, listen, you said that that's what you wanted me to do. If you left the truck, yeah, but I didn't. But I'm sorry. Now, he doesn't forget anymore. The first thing to do with family meetings and contracts that you make with your children is to remember to not make contracts or agreements that you're not willing to keep. Because the children are first going to look for you whether or not you are accountable. And if you're not accountable, you are creating the opportunity for your children to be not accountable, which you will, of course, then later blame them for and punish them for, without remembering that you are the one who sets a standard. So set up family rules that are fair, supportive of the family, not of your own comfort, but supportive of the family, and then stick to them. Experiment with it for 1 week and have a family meeting for sure every week where you handle grievances, upsets, broken agreements, where you handle your own case as far as having let yourself down, forgotten to do things, letting things slide, and you as a parent start off to begin with. You acknowledge the things that you have not done. I'm telling you what to do. What I did was to give everybody one voice. Everybody, my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old, my wife and I, we each had a voice. Now, as far as the house is concerned, it was my house, so you can't have a fire on the living room floor. You know, there are certain limits. But only within that practical perimeter of ownership of the house, that I have to take responsibility for that. Now, there were times when my wife and I didn't agree, where we had to work it out by consulting the children. Now, what seems to be most fair, what seems ultimately to produce the kind of result that we want, which was to feel a sense of well-being, happiness, security, joy, love. What would promote that? And there would be times when I reluctantly, I admit, sometimes very reluctantly, would have to back off and allow things to occur in the household that weren't completely in alignment with the way that I think things ought to be run. And, of course, I always thought that I was right and knew better, which was one of the things that I learned to abandon. We always worked out the differences. I don't remember at any time that there were differences that could not be worked out. We also did experimentation with how to relate to one another. For instance, if my wife and I would argue, we would sometimes get the children to show us what we looked like arguing. So they would act out Mom and Papa arguing. And it was wonderful. You know, we got to see that I could totally identify with my daughter who was playing me, and my son was playing Mother. So that now Mother and Father was arguing. And I would sit back and we would laugh and sometimes be embarrassed because it was so true. And then sometimes my wife and I would act out the way that the children were arguing together, and they would roll over on the floor laughing. I think that when we begin to tell the truth in family meetings like that, when we risk being vulnerable like that, when we begin to acknowledge ourselves the way we really are like that, that there is an element of trust in the family that promotes the experience of love, of happiness, of satisfaction and joy, and laughter, which we had a lot of. We cannot assume that a family is going to work without rules. Nothing else in our environment, the way that we know our environment, works without rules. So family meetings, I think, are an absolutely essential ingredient for promoting the very thing that I want to promote as a purpose of this new way of parenting. That is to teach the children how to respect themselves. Because my intention is to give back to the children what we may never have received from our parents. Not because our parents were bad, not because of the parents who are listening to this tape are bad, not because they don't have as the most important desire in their hearts to do the best for their children that they possibly could, but because we didn't look at life the way that we can now look at life. We were brought up very often with little sense of self-respect, because there was very little trust that we were capable of being trusted. There was very little trust that we were capable of telling the truth, because the opportunity to tell the truth was most often associated with guilt, punishment, and detriment to our well-being. So we were taught at all costs to avoid issues that had to do with accountability and telling the truth. Our parents knew that we could not be trusted, never understanding that we had never been given the opportunity to demonstrate our ability to be trusted. If we made just one mistake, that was forever it on trust. Although that as parents, we know now they were not always trustworthy. My purpose is to begin to establish an environment where the children grow up with a sense of self-respect. You and I both know that we spend a lot of time proving that we are respectable and covering up all the things that we don't want people to know, which would take away from that illusion of respect. We want to have jobs and positions and apartments or houses and environments and cars that demonstrate that we can be respected. Because the real nature of respect, that of respecting oneself, has been taken away. And that gets taken away in childhood and never gets reestablished. What I would like to see happen is that we give back to children, or begin to give to children, the beginning sense of self-respect, the beginning sense that they can be trusted, so that they grow up as people who can be trusted. If we bring up an environment of young persons who can think for themselves, who have integrity, who trust themselves, who have respect for themselves, we will never see some of the disasters occur in our society the way that we see it now. We would not. Any person with any sense of respect for who he or she is would never do some of the things that we see happening in our society today. But most people do the things that they do out of some sense of futility about who they are. A sense of, whatever I do doesn't matter. So what, I go and vote, it doesn't make any difference. They have no sense that they matter, that who they are important. And that comes out of our initial way, our initial attitude towards children, that they cannot be trusted. I do think that children will, given the opportunity, demonstrate to us an ability to manifest themselves with integrity that is way beyond anything that we have ever dreamt of.
ISA would like to thank Ole and the ISA graduates who made this series possible. Please be reminded that reproduction of these programs in any manner without authorization is unlawful. Thank you for listening. To thank Ole and the ISA graduates who made this series possible. Thank you for listening. Please be reminded that reproduction of this tape in any manner without authorization is unlawful.